From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Lee Memorial Health System is reducing the number of people who regularly use its emergency rooms. We'll explore a program targeting the underlying reasons that cause them to frequently visit the ER. Plus, it's been 5 years since Governor Rick Scott rolled back several laws dealing with how Florida manages growth. We'll talk with one reporter who recently took an in-depth look at Florida's development boom, how it's regulated, and what it means for the environment. First, this news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Topher Forges. It's been 5 years since Governor Rick Scott came into office. Not long after, Scott, with the help of the legislature, rolled back several laws dealing with growth, making it easier for developers to move forward with large-scale projects. The numbers are dramatic. In 2011, when Scott became governor, roughly 42,000 permits were issued for new homes. Last year, that number came close to 110,000. The governor's office says the boom is the sign of a thriving economy and led to tax breaks for Floridians. Still, environmentalists worry about the state's accelerated growth, and local governments fear taxpayers will pick up the tab to create infrastructure around these projects. Palm Beach Post Tallahassee reporter John Kennedy covered all of this in his May 27 article, How Rick Scott's Regulations Rollback Led to Today's Building Boom. He joins us today on the show. John, thanks for coming on to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
So let's set the scene. We'll start with 2011. The state is trying to recover from the recession. Rick Scott comes into office. He's looking at a 12% unemployment rate, and he looks at these development rules. What is he looking at specifically within those?
Well, a lot of it was sort of the signature Growth Management Act that the Florida legislature had enacted in 1985. So it had been on the books 25 years, roughly, you know, as it came along in 2011. It was a state oversight of major growth projects, major development, required developers to go through quite a few hoops, required local government to go through quite a few hoops as well when it came to regulatory oversight by the state. The Republican-led legislature for several years had been bristling at growth management, kind of arguing that it was overly burdensome, and it really blunted the state's ability to bounce back from the economic slump that the state was in, the recession, which, of course, somewhat paradoxically, was created maybe by overbuilding in Florida. So that kind of raises the question, how effective maybe was the Growth Management Act to begin with? But nonetheless, in 2011, the governor, and this was his first year as governor, pushed a very willing legislature through to roll back these growth management standards. It's all kind of technical, but one of the things they got rid of 5 years ago was concurrency. This is a requirement that schools, parks, and adequate roads be in place before development is completed. This instead was reduced to just an option that cities and counties can request of developers. So that kind of raised some questions about, well, you know, who's going to pay for the impact of this growth? Then finally, in 2011, the governor and the legislature also eliminated the state agency that oversaw growth management. That was the state's Department of Community Affairs. The remaining duties that were involved in this agency were then folded into a newly created Department of Economic Opportunity. And this is where they remain today.
What are the consequences of that?
Well, it seems to be something that growth and decisions as to whether a project is good or has any larger impact are all left to the local governments to decide. Now, you know, this gets into sort of policy 101, I guess, but you know, that sounds like a good thing, that local governments, that the government closest to the people decides, which is true. But I think there is a feeling that local governments can be overly influenced by influential local developers, and that the local governments sometimes needed a backstop with the state stepping in and playing sort of a role of, you know, let's take another look at this and see what kind of impact maybe this project might have on a neighboring county or on roads that connect multiple cities, those kind of elements. And the question now is whether that's being done at all, and it really is not under this.
And that's an ongoing conversation that exists today. Like you said, you quoted a Palm Beach city commissioner who that exact same concern that they were afraid taxpayers would be picking up the bill for when these developments get approved and sort of pop up, and we have to figure out a way to connect them.
Right, right. Now, of course, you know, you can turn that back on that county commissioner too and say, well, it's your responsibility now as a local official to make sure that this doesn't happen, you know, which may be true, but I think it's almost one of those, you know, protect them from themselves maybe when it comes to local politicians.
And so what does it take today to approve a development? Say I have a piece of land and I want to, you know, put however many homes on it.
Well, that comes into that is a local fight, you know, fought out at either the city or the county commission level. And, you know, that is still something where, you know, I'm not really saying here that getting a development project approved is an easy task, but it is one where you negotiate now solely at the local level under, you know, most circumstances. The one of the last broader reaches that the state had was eliminated just last year. This was something called the Development of Regional Impact, the DRI process, as it was called. That's another thing that the state had had in place since 1972. It even predated the Growth Management Act. But this was designed to try to help the state manage large-scale projects that had, you know, a broader impact maybe than a couple of cities or even a county. And now that's off the books as well. So it's really back to the local governments when it comes to what they can require and demand of developers. And that's really a negotiation, you know, a political negotiation between the developer and the local governments.
So the state really doesn't have much of a role in overseeing what gets planned and what gets put up?
Right, it does not. Yeah.
And in your article, I believe you talked to some people who were talking about smart growth, and they said that these types of projects first, when we talk about these types of projects, when we talk about these really large projects, there are people in your article who say, you know, these wouldn't have been allowed to be built now in the places they were. What's sort of the size and scope that we're talking about when it comes to these projects?
Well, some of them are pretty enormous. You know, there's some not too far from where you are in Collier County. The federal government is being asked to remake the eastern part of the county, an area that many see as prime Florida panther habitat. They want this to be positioned so that new towns can be created through what's called an environmental super permit. This could open up about 45,000 acres in eastern Collier County to development, and 10 big landowners and builders are involved in that effort. In Palm Beach County, where I ride for, there's the western area of the county. There's 14,000 new homes planned that are spread across four new communities, and one of them wants to become the county's 39th city. So they want to, you know, be incorporated. That has raised some alarms locally because the feeling is that now here, whatever the county commission negotiated with this community, now if it becomes an independent city, well, the county commission regulations can be lifted or can be, you know, modified, because now you have a city government that is going to be deciding the future development of this project. Around the state, there's other similar big ones. Babcock Ranch is a giant development in Charlotte County. Plum Creek in Alachua County is another one that is in the works. And in Osceola County, another one called Deseret Ranches is on the horizon as well. These are all, mega houses and commercial space and golf courses, and many of them are in areas that a lot of local people, I think, thought were off limits to development. That's another area of contention now. I guess as land becomes more scarce in Florida, where some of these mega developments are going now, is teetering pretty close to some pretty fragile areas, some pretty environmentally fragile areas.
And what got rolled back that I guess would have made it, as I said before, they mentioned that, it would have been possible for in these places where they're being built. What got rolled back in the rules that has made it, easier for these to really come to fruition?
Well, I think getting rid of the Growth Management Act, the 1985 Growth Management Act, that had a cascading effect. And I think it has sent a signal across the state that the time is ripe for development in Florida. And, even the fact that what few regulations still exist at the state level through the remnants of the Department of Community Affairs are now in an organization called the Department of Economic Opportunity. I think that sends a signal, I think, as well, that, Florida is kind of open for business when it comes to development. Now, from the vantage point of the economy is rebounding, there are many that would say, bring it on, that this is what is helping lead to a state jobless rate now that fell to just under 5% in the month of March. It's sort of at the lowest level in 8 years now.
Right.
So
and
that payback.
When Governor Scott came into office, as I said before, they had double-digit unemployment. And so the idea was we'll roll these back and that will spurn growth, we'll have it growing at a faster rate, we'll build more, and you'll be able to see the economy rebound that much faster?
Yeah, I think that was part of the thinking. It was, as we can remember, once the recession hit, foreclosures went through the roof, and the construction industry basically dried up there for a couple of years in Florida. And when Scott came into office at the beginning of 2011, things were still very bad, and I think he saw as his mantra, obviously, is creating jobs. That's his signature policy as the state's chief executive. And one way to do it was to make it easier for development to foster. And I think the fact that we have this spread of very large developments right now going on, I think, is somewhat a testament to that.
Right, and so that has been his response. I saw that you quote him in the article, essentially saying Florida is on a roll and it's really rebounding.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think I don't think he really sees any potential alarm with this. I guess where some question the direction of the state is the fact that we have had in recent years some pretty cataclysmic environmental problems. Indian River Lagoon, Caloosahatchee River in southwest Florida, there are a lot of major environmental woes that the state is dealing with right now, many of which are at least partially attributed to development and growth. From the governor's vantage point, I think he sees that the state has money to manage these environmental problems because we are drawing tax dollars from this big development that is going on. But it does create, I think in the eyes of some, a strange rhythm that we have here where we are perhaps overbuilding and then we're causing environmental problems. But because we have money in the state treasury, because of the overbuilding, we're able to try to pour money toward the environmental problems, trying to address them. So it is a tough cycle that we're in right now.
A little circular.
Yeah.
We're talking about Florida's development boom. Do you have questions for journalist John Kennedy, who wrote an article in the Palm Beach Post May 27th titled How Rick Scott's Regulations Rollback Led to Today's Building Boom? You can join the conversation by calling 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Send email to GulfCoastLive@WGCU.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, or tweet using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And going back to sort of how all of the money works, you know, the governor said, we get this revenue from the taxes, which we can use towards, I think he pointed to an Everglades restoration.
Mm-hmm.
But he also, it was part of how he, I believe I saw in one of the articles dealing with this, it also allowed him to get to his tax breaks for the public.
Right. Well, the state budget overall, you know, all of this is connected. The state budget is benefiting from a sharp uptick in recent years now of real estate tax collections. These are so-called documentary stamp taxes that are paid as you know construction is goes on, and these doc stamps last year rose 17%. They brought $2.1 billion into the state treasury. That was the highest level for those collections since 2006, when they had really been astronomical. They had hit a sort of a pre-recession high of $4 billion in 2005. Now, that was also somewhat artificially inflated by two straight years of hurricane rebuilding. Now, you know, we've had a pretty quiet few hurricane seasons right now here as we launch another hurricane season today. But nonetheless, it would suggest that the state treasury is benefiting from all this this development, which in turn makes budget writing much easier for the legislature and allows the governor to make good on his reelection promise to give back $1 billion in tax breaks.
And we're going to take a call from Andy in Fort Myers. Andy, you're on the line. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Fantastic. Hey, guys. How's it going? I appreciate you guys taking my call. Real quick, I'm calling. I live up in Palmetto, Florida, which is Manatee County. And, you know, I like to consider myself somebody who loves the environment. And we have a huge development that went up in an area called Perico Bayou, which is right there on the Tampa Bay area. Tons of bird habitat, tons of mangroves, and I was surprised to see that this large development went up right there in a wetland area. And my ultimate question is this: is there no federal oversight limiting these types of developments and you know, sanctuaries or what we perceive as a sanctuary area? That's essentially my question.
Thank you for your call, Andy. John?
That's you know almost one of those kind of case by case situations. Yes, it can be. There can be some federal oversight, I guess, depending on where the area is. It's close to some federal wildlife refuge or wetlands preserve. For example, situation I'd mentioned to you at the outset from Collier County, that is something where indeed the federal government is part of the focus, where there is Florida panther habitat in the kind of remote eastern part of Collier County, which has a lot of federal land and federal oversight. They're trying to open that to development. So, occasionally there can be, kind of a federal issue that the developers have to deal with as well. Obviously, that gets a lot more complicated for the developers, so they prefer to deal, with as few governments as possible.
And also, the developments when they, these larger developments make environmental concessions. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, that seems to be something new now too, where development in the last few years, this is kind of a marketing thing where I think people that are looking to buy now in some of these locations are looking for a little bit of a green friendliness to the development. I guess I think, I've been around Florida for a number of years now. I remember the developments of, you know, the 80s and whatnot, and those were perhaps a little more stark. The idea of, you know, putting in a golf course was sort of the green space. Now people want a little bit more like walkways, you know, bird sanctuaries to be preserved, waterways that you have some access to as a resident. So a lot of these developments are somewhat eco-friendly, even though they are going into areas and being built on areas that are even more ecologically fragile, but they're preserving some of it as well. So sometimes that gets a little bit less protest. It can sometimes bring in the support of organizations like, Audubon of Florida may support a project because the project has some good intentions for the wildlife that are there. So developers have become smart about their potential customers and also about trying to tamp down vehement opposition from local residents, because they are showing some recognition of the need to preserve the green.
And you said that's more of a recent strategy?
Yeah, I think it is, yeah. And I think it's a little bit of just meeting the demands of the baby boomer market or whatever group that we are now trying to appeal to. I think the people that they are looking to sell homes to have a greater sensitivity to that. And, in Alachua County, for example, there's a massive development plan called Plum Creek. And that has been, kind of going back and forth with the county over how to develop homes and commercial space in this ecologically friendly area. And, the developers are trying to kind of keep it as green as possible, I guess, but they're also looking to put in a lot of homes.
Yeah, I think with, on the Southwest Florida line, Babcock Ranch was part of a large land sale to the state. And with
right.
in Eastern Collier County, what they're doing over there, they have a habitat conservation plan that's going to offset a lot of land, a lot of mitigation land.
Right.
We're going to take another call from Mike. Mike, you're on the air. Mike is no longer on the air. We may get back to him in just a second. We're talking about Florida's development boom. Do you have questions for journalist John Kennedy, who wrote an article in the Palm Beach Post on May 27th titled How Rick Scott's Regulations Rollback Led to Today's Building Boom? You can join the conversation by calling 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Send an email to golfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, or tweet using the hashtag GolfCoastLive. Something I wanted to ask you about, John, also, Florida is one of the fastest growing states in the country, as I understand it. And there's somebody in your article who is, essentially saying, hey, we're running out of houses. Essentially, this development is necessary. Do you think that's the case?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised by that. But the person I was speaking to was a professor of real estate and finance at the University of Central Florida, who is a pretty, smart observer of the industry right now. And, it's a combination of things where, Florida is still a very popular destination. People want to live here, he told me. And but he also that across the state, there seems to be the feeling that as the population swells, they are, we are running out of houses, as he put it. So there will always be a demand for this kind of development. That may be true. It seems hard to believe that, as we are still, other components of state government that I follow still bemoan the vast number of foreclosures that the state is still reeling in, which are, kind of a legacy of the recession. So, I don't know. I guess it's one of those things where in certain areas people want new homes. They want homes in a coveted part of the state. And maybe these homes that are foreclosed upon are not where people want to go. But There's always a drive to build, it seems like.
Sure, it might be an article down the road.
Right.
And that's what I was.
I haven't fully fleshed that out.
All right, we're going to try Mike again. Hi, Mike. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Sure. What's your comment?
Yeah, what I wanted to see if there was anything going on with incentives being given to land developers who act responsibly or develop land in a responsible way, and if there's preferential treatment for those developers in any sort of way. Because I think development's important, but it also needs to be done in a responsible way.
Thanks for your call, Mike. John, I think that's an interesting question. Is there an incentive for sort of smart growth? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think there is, and I think that's something where local governments are attempting that, and in many cases, some of these developments that we spoke about a moment ago, Babcock Ranch in Charlotte County, Plum Creek, Alachua County, Deseret Ranches, which are underway in Osceola County, some of these big developments all are looking to preserve a lot of green, and that makes it a lot easier to negotiate with the county commission. It keeps the public at bay. It doesn't alarm people that they're going to be losing some favored greenway or waterway. So I think it's smart development to try to do it that way. Plus, then you also sometimes can get some environmental organizations who sign on to your idea. It's always better to have those kind of groups on your side, I suppose, than fighting you. So I think from a business point of view, it makes a lot of sense for developers to try to do it that way.
And do you see, where have we come since 2011 in terms of the results of this in terms of job numbers?
Well, job numbers, the state is, remarkably better. There are, jobs unfilled. We went from an unemployment rate of 12% back in 2011 when Scott first took office, I mean, pretty close to 12%. And last month, the rate had fallen to 4.9%. So, I should say that's the month of March. We get our employment figures a little bit delayed. But So the numbers have vastly improved across the state, and that makes a big difference too.
And I guess it kind of boils down to that question: are we building just to build, or are we building to meet a demand?
Right, and that's something that maybe we will not see for a while.
And for you as a reporter, what inspired you to write this article or look into this?
Well, I think for us at the Palm Beach Post, we're very we're looking very carefully at a lot of the development that is going on in Palm Beach County's unincorporated western area, where we have these four big new developments that are coming on. Having that on the doorstep of the county, that's going to change a lot of lifestyle across the eastern parts of the county, where we have environmental issues, we have traffic issues, and how careful the county commission is doing in dealing with this development is a question that I think lingers, and that my paper has done a rather aggressive approach to what's going on. So the fact that what's happening locally is also happening across Florida made me kind of go back in the Wayback Machine here and realize, it was 5 years ago that all these growth management efforts were really scaled back. Could there be a link? And I think just by the timing of some of these projects, I think it does suggest that there is.
That they all came online, really. Could you see a shift in sort of the size and scale of these projects, prior to 2011, for how many were being brought up and put on the table versus what's happening now?
Well, yeah, I mean, we were in a real, barren period there before 2011 with development. And I think also the fact that where these new developments are going – is something that suggests perhaps a lesser degree of state oversight, because they are really going into some rather environmentally fragile areas. And that's something that I think the state hurdles that had existed before under the 1985 Growth Management Act and subsequent legislation with developments of regional impact, I think would have perhaps hit the brakes on some of these projects.
And that's all the time we have for today's show. Thanks for coming on the show, John.
Thank you.
John Kennedy is the Tallahassee reporter for the Palm Beach Post. You can read his story and get more information on today's show at wgcunews.org/Gulf Coast Live. Continue the conversation on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, or go on Twitter and use the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. Thanks to my producers, Richard Chinqui and AJ Leonard. This is WGCU FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida. I'm Topher Forges. Have a good afternoon.